Hey guys, I just wanted to let you know that this podcast is presented by mybookie.ag and that if you use the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, that you will get a 50% deposit bonus on your first deposit. And given that you are a listener to this podcast, I would assume you're relatively knowledgeable about sports, and I would trust you to try your edge on the online sportsbook. You can lay down some money and get in on the action at one of the safest online sportsbooks in the world. It's the only one that I am currently using. You can wager on all sorts of different outcomes on mybookie.ag, soccer, football, any major league, esports. You can even create your own player props, which is useful for me because if you know anything about me, I do enjoy a good player prop. So if you deposit using the promo code MATTEK, M-A-T-T-E-K, you get a 50% bonus when you deposit. And I will add this for listeners of the TakeCast. If you deposit using the promo code MATTEK and you send proof of it to me on Twitter, I will follow you on Twitter and you can have access to me via DMs whenever you want. That's the TakeCast bonus that I'm adding in association with the mybookie.ag deposit bonus. Now let's get back to the show. Hello everyone, I would like to welcome you to another episode of the TakeCast. My name is Davis Matic. You can find me on Twitter at Davis Matic. Today I have another discussion with our buddy Josh Hermsmeyer from 444. You can find him on Twitter at Frisco Josh. We have a really good conversation, of course, about analytics and football, David Johnson versus the field, why he hates soccer and how we'd fix it, all the good topics that we can get into with someone as sharp and as personable as Josh. Really good episode. Hope you guys like it. If you want to help the show, a couple things you can do is, of course, sign up for MyBookie using the promo code MATTEK, and of course, as always, leave a ratings and review on iTunes. You have no idea how helpful it is. It's absolutely massive. We are almost to 200 ratings, which of course will release a bonus episode of the show. If you want to hear that bonus episode right now while you're listening to the show, go leave a 5-star rating. I'll appreciate you. I'll shout you out on Twitter if you want it. And now we'll go ahead and get into the episode with Josh. All right, would like to welcome back our first return guest here on the TakeCast, Josh Hermsmeyer from 444.com, airyards.com, statsareforlosers.com. You've just come up enough throughout the course of all the other shows that I feel like we had to get you back on and get some updated takes. It was important.
Right on. I've listened to almost all the shows, well, ones that weren't about soccer, and they were awesome. And I love what you're doing with this thing. I hope more people are tuning in because there are some sharp folks in this space, and they have interesting takes on all sorts of things beyond sports.
Yeah, a lot of more intelligent people than me talking is good. That's the basis of the show. That's what, because like my idea with the show is I kind of wanted to do the BS report, right? But like good and like for people my age. And the reason you listen to that show is it's not Simmons. It's all the people he gets to talk to him about, because no one gets better podcast guests than Bill Simmons. He like leads the league in great podcast guests.
Well, I mean, I've done some podcasting for a while now, and not as long as you, but you know, being a good host is a tough thing as well, and all the rest. So, yeah, no, you're being too easy on the guests and too hard on yourself, I think.
So the first thing I have to ask you is, who would you take first overall in fantasy football, and would you be willing to bet that person against the field for any amount of money and put it in escrow right now?
Just against the field.
If you say someone's first overall, that means you at least think he's better than the next 23 players in a standard league, and therefore you need to be willing to put at least $5,000 down on said player versus the field.
Right, or you're hot air and you're Chumpzilla. I mean, that's just the way it goes, especially when you're tweeting things out. You know it's really, really super serious.
Yeah, it's just
and
fact.
And it's time
to flip
or shut up.
Yeah,
exactly. So, but I mean, I saw all that go down between you and Must See TV, and I think you know, obviously Derek's initial tweet, he backed off of it. It was ridiculous, and you know, if he laid odds on that initial tweet, maybe it wouldn't have been so ridiculous. It still would have been.
Yeah, if he's listening and he wants to book the 40-1 bet for $1,000, Absolutely, I'm down. Please, I would love to have DJ at those odds because it would really give me something to root for every game. And I would be I would be rooting every quarterback to get injured. Like, I would want Brady and Breeze to miss like three games.
And I think the line is fair at 40-1. You know, haggling between 2.5% and maybe a 4.3% play when $1,000 is on the line, I think is ridiculous. Like, you're the largest favorite to just have $1,000 at the end of the season. Like, yeah, your downside is
like
there,
if DJ misses like a half, he probably becomes like a 99.5% favorite.
Right, and you're going up against QBs. You're going up against, I mean, guys that are going to play 16 games for most likely. I mean, I even think 40-1 might be, you know, might be a little strong for you. And so I just can't believe he backed off after coming so strong when he finally got odds that were reasonable on such a ridiculous play. So anyway, but that was fun.
It was a fun night on Twitter. I'm glad everyone got their enjoyments. No one really got their feelings hurt, probably, except maybe Siege might have gotten his feelings hurt. Which, like, you know, Siege also got some fish action for me. He got that bet in at 23-1, so he made $50 off of me just for defending his buddy. So
yeah, you know, yeah, that was pretty rough for you. But again, I mean, like, if you win, you know.
If I win, it's going to be probably the best day for me in fantasy history. Getting that PayPal for $1,000 from Siege is going to feel good. That will feel very good.
Very nice. Yeah. I mean, you're going to have to gloat. It'll be fun.
So after our first discussion, the second episode of this show, I kind of got on this bend of thinking about the ways that football could be different, right? Like, the game that we watch now, there's no real set metaphysical reason why it has to be played the way it is now. So the first thing that I started to think about after I interviewed Dan Orlovsky was flag football. Why could the game that we watch not be played with flag football? Stylistically and tactically, I don't really know how much different it would be. The running game would basically be non-existent, but we kind of both think that should be the case anyway.
I think, I mean, I've gotten, maybe me and Ben Baldwin have gotten this reputation of saying the run is absolutely useless, and I think there's a place for it. So it would be sad to see the run game go away completely. I mean, it was a big part of football for a long, long time. And flag football, first, let me agree with your premise. Like, I totally think that, you know, you don't need to have really, really hard tackling for football to stay football. Like, I think you do need linemen for football to stay football. And I think you need tackling to be meaningful because it's such a core part of the game. Like, whatever it is, I don't know that flags are the best solution, but we have all sorts of ways, I think, technically to create a game where it's physical, but it's not to the level that it is now, where it's a little safer and tackling takes physicality and it takes wrapping them up. But maybe there's a, you know, you get two arms around a guy and the sensors know that he's tackled and that's it. That's it. You know, that the part of the field.
You said something interesting there, the sensors. Like, I totally think like microchips and sensors and all that stuff could totally play a role in football 13 years from now in like a way that we're not exactly projecting now, but I definitely think they should, should be open to something like that.
Yeah, for sure. And so you get an arm tackle, he's wrapped up, and maybe you don't have to finish, and maybe there's sensors in the field, and then the line gets painted right on the field where he was tackled, you know? I mean, there's lots of interesting possible potential ways to solve the problem of excess violence in football where people get injured and CTE and all the rest. And I just think it would be a shame for football to go the way of the dodo because it's so awesome in all the other ways. It's like so complex and it's so, there's just so much strategy and tactics and like, unlike baseball, right, where you have the three true outcomes and when you optimize for them, two of them are shitty and boring, like walks and strikeouts are just lame. They're lame to watch as a sporting viewer, the home run is awesome.
Oh, right? A strikeout can be fun to watch. I disagree with that. Depending on who's pitching, the strikeout can be fun to watch for sure. Like, if I'm watching a Clayton Kershaw game and I don't have the hatred for baseball that you do, I wouldn't say I'm a pure baseball fan. When the Royals are good, I'll watch a lot of the games. They won't be good for like another 20 years. So I've been, that sentence is not, I'm not going to have to worry about it. But like, I appreciate like Clayton Kershaw, or Max Scherzer throwing a ball accurately 103 miles an hour repeatedly is like, that's a pretty cool thing to watch.
Repeatedly. And that's the thing, I guess, at the play level, you know, even one of the greatest pitches you've ever seen is really only worth a third of an out. And it's just like, ugh. You know, and like in a great play in football, it mattered, right? Mm-hmm. It mattered to the outcome of the game. But anyway, the great thing about football relative to baseball in that regard is when you optimize for football, we optimize for passing, you still have a myriad of ways to do that passing thing. Only one way to hit a home run. And so it's like, I think football will benefit more from optimization than baseball has. Like, people are saying, oh, analytics have ruined baseball. You know, it's so terrible now. It's so boring to watch. There's a shift in everyone. Everyone's got their swing plane, and, you know, they're all trying to hit home runs, and there's lots of strikeouts, and it's lame.
And yeah, baseball is super solved. Baseball is like 15 years away from being like a legit, like from player development to roster construction to everything being like a completely solved game. Limit hold'em.
Not at the game level, though, right? Because that's why you have best of seven series and stuff like that. So I think at the game level, people want to say that baseball's like this, you know, this deterministic system or something, you know, because there's 162 games. We know.
Yeah, but like anything can happen in a seven-game series for sure.
And that still makes it fun if what you're doing on the field is interesting, right? Like, I get you made the point about strikes and strikeouts and stuff like that, and I think it's well taken. But
I have I have compared to the average citizen, like a 20% greater level of appreciation for baseball, because I do kind of like it. I would never watch a regular season game with no money on the line, but I do kind of like it.
Yeah, that's fair.
So I also, there's one other wrinkle that I started thinking of. So when I was in college, we had a flag football team, right? In like intramurals or whatever. But the rules for flag football are it's two forward passes. So you can advance the ball once from behind the line of scrimmage, and then you have another forward pass that you can make. And I actually think that football, like American gridiron football, is less rooted kind of in history and tradition and all of that than baseball and basketball are, because the raw counting numbers, those records matter, but they don't matter the way they do in baseball, and they not even as much as they do in basketball. And I could actually see some development in the rules of the line of scrimmage changing at some point. And I'm not even saying that there's a call for this now, or that this is the way that the game will be saved or anything like that. I'm just kind of wondering your thoughts on changes on the rules of the line of scrimmage, or how the ball can be advanced, you know, over the next 50 years.
Yeah. I mean, I'm open to anything. Like one of the things that bugs me the most is when people are just axiomatically against any changes because tradition. Like, no, I mean, like, make the game better, make it more entertaining. I don't care. I mean, you call it what you want, throw whatever shade you want on it, but let's give things a try. One of the things I've been advocating for, anyone who will listen, is based on what happened with Goff, based on the NFL, whether teams are actually employing their quarterbacks and passing enough. It is a passing league. Everyone acknowledges that. And we don't have enough quarterbacks to go around. And we saw what happened with Goff, with McVay last year, where he had 15 seconds, half the play clock roughly, to talk to him about and help him read the pre-snaps looks. And I think, wouldn't it be great, given this dearth of quarterback quality, if we could have that full time in the headset, and then the coaches can help their quarterbacks.
Why is it not allowed? What is the rule on communication between the coach and the quarterback now?
Well, the rule is after 15 seconds, it shuts off.
Why is that even? That seems horribly dumb. Why is that even the rule?
It's a rule because there's this idea that you don't want the quarterback out there with the coach in his ear because it's unfair. Or I heard a former coach just recently, when I brought this up, said, well, you're rewarding the lazy coaches. And I don't know what to do with that.
I think that's the exact opposite. You're rewarding the coaches who are like more invested and have a greater idea of what's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. And then consider someone like Kaepernick, who perhaps, you know, has all the physical tools you might ever want, but was a single field, you know, half field read guy, and maybe he wasn't the best at diagnosing the play before the snap. Mm-hmm. If you help guys like that, they stay in the league long. It's better for the league. It's better for teams. You need a competent quarterback, and this is one way to help them get up to speed. Call it training wheels. Call it whatever you want. I don't think it's laziness. I think you're elevating the play of the most important position on the field, and it makes for a better product.
So this is actually a question that I have coming up a little bit later in regards to line play, but we can just do it now.
Okay.
So the question about line play was just the idea that, you know, the last 5 years, basically ever since that 2011 year, like the crazy passing year, the hum of people criticizing offensive line play has gotten louder and louder. And I'm listening to like all the team previews right now, like on Football Guys and RotoViz and stuff. And the thing I've heard more often than not is analysts being like, oh, well, their offensive line sucks. You know, they drafted these guards hoping to solve their offensive line. They signed a new left tackle hoping to fix the offensive line. And my theory is it might just be really hard to be an offensive lineman. And the more times per game you have someone whose only job is to run directly by you, come at you, more often you'll fail. And I kind of think that might be true of quarterbacks too. I don't really know if I believe that we have a dearth of quarterback talent. I think we're asking quarterbacks to do more things on a more consistent basis. Like 15 years ago, Jared Goff would have maybe thrown 400 times in a season. Maybe, right? And now that would be completely archaic.
Yeah, no, I think they're all tied up. Like, because we're asking the QB position to do so much now, because you need to make all these checks and you need to make a full field progression read on a lot of plays and a lot of pass concepts. You may have a high low on the left and then your check down on the right, you know, and sometimes you can't decipher that quickly enough and all of the routes are covered because you didn't get the timing right. And so I think that those pre-snap reads and helping the team can really help. But to the O-line play, yeah, I think that's right. I mean, like, if you're passing more and you're asking them to do something that's very difficult more often, then you'll expose guys that, you know, perhaps you won't have deception on your side, and you'll expose guys that perhaps are not that great at what they do. But I think also the biggest part of that, and I think if you talk to coaches, and I think that they're right on this, I think we have a third of the playing time in practice and training camp that we had when Bill Walsh was a coach. And for a unit like the offensive line, I think that really, really matters. I think they need to have pads on, and they need to be going up against guys who are trying to get past them.
That's like a player safety initiative thing, right? Like
it was the collective bargaining agreement. They basically said we don't want so many practices, and that was one of the main asks from the union. And so that's what they got.
I absolutely see that from the player's perspective. You get hurt in practice. You're costing yourself millions of dollars. Why not limit? And you know, you're getting paid for the games. You know, you're not getting paid for practice.
But in a unit that needs cohesion like the offensive line, it does help explain why perhaps offensive line play overall is down. And then there's all the injuries and the movement between the pieces in the line. I mean, like, if you need cohesion, it's been really difficult to achieve recently.
Yeah, offensive line play is fascinating to me because I can truly say I don't get it. Like, I think that's something you have to have been in the world of football to understand. Like, I can watch cornerbacks, know what they're doing, kind of figure out what the assignment is, all that stuff, but offensive line play, I'm just like figuring out the assignments and stuff. That's just beyond my pay grade.
One plug, there's a guy, Cover One on Twitter, who writes for The Athletic, and he interviewed the former center of the Bills, so he knows all about run calling, stunts and everything like that, and he actually interviewed him and did a whole article on how the offensive line and the center calls makes the line calls, and it was fascinating. Just a great article. I recommend anyone check it out. I learned a lot.
That's a Bill Simmons theory, that when the center gets hurt and gets replaced by the backup center, that's like the second biggest injury the offense can have other than the quarterback. Like, having to replace the center is brutal.
I buy that.
All right, what do we have next here? Okay, yes. So let's take some math to the extreme for the moment. We both think Bitcoin becomes worth $1 million. I sell my Bitcoin. I'm rich. you hit on some much sharper financial investment than Bitcoin. You and I buy the Buffalo Bills, right? So we own an NFL team now, and we just decide, you know what? We're just going to take every data point to the extreme. We're going to throw the ball 90% of downs. You know, we have a league talented, we have a league average roster, and we're just going to follow the data. And then that same season is played back with John Fox, Norv Turner, and Rex Ryan, those were about the most league average sort of coaches I could imagine to put a unit together. What is the difference in record between the teams? How much better does our mathematically optimized team do versus the average Joe NFL team?
So it's an interesting question, and I actually I spent some time kind of just doing a quick calculation on this, but a lot of like simplifying assumptions. So
sure, yeah. I mean, this is to do this properly, you'd have to write a book, right? But this is just the base level conversation.
Yeah, and so what I did was I just looked at like first and second down, second and long, and first and 10. Those are the majority of plays. And I just looked at what the teams have done historically, or at least the past 2 years on those plays. Right now, teams are running 65% of the time on first and 10 and second and long. And they are the EPA, so the expected points added per play on each of those run plays is negative 0.19. So 0.2 of a point every time they do that. Whereas if they passed, it's almost the reverse, 0.13 points added, positive. So the league is 65% run and 35% pass. We would be 72.5% run. Let's make it reasonable. Like that is high. That's higher than anyone's ever done. Let's not go 90. Let's keep it,
Yeah, but we'd have our YOLO QB trio of Luke Falk, Jacoby Brissett, and JT Barrett.
Word. So if we did that, if we had the 72% pass, just doing that, and I haven't even gotten into, again, this is assuming league average offensive talent.
Yes.
And they had league average offensive talent. We would have 3.2 points per game over expected added. They would have negative 4.9 points per game under expected. So their average points per game for that season would be 16.9. Ours would be 25. That works out to, if you use like Pythagorean wins, we would have 9.3 wins and they would have 5.7. And that is just on first and second down and second and long, not even every second situation on second down. And so it just kind of shows that, if you just do the right thing in the right amount, you put yourself in a good position to win in football. And this is really a case where I've said this a couple times on Twitter, the 3-point revolution in the NBA was first kind of, they kind of pushed back against it for all the normal reasons, history, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. But also because the ball goes through the hoop less often. Right. So it's like this, there's this visual thing. It's like, well, you don't score as often. So that's higher variance. How are you going to win that way? And when they had to say, well, look, it's just worth more on average, like the value of a 3-pointer is worth more than a 2 when you account for how often they go in the basket. Well, passing, imagine if the 3-pointer was not only worth more on average, but it went through the hoop more often. That's passing.
That's passing.
It's more successful and it's worth more. Like, it doesn't make any sense that teams are running 65% of the time on first and 10 and second and long. It makes no sense. I can't explain it.
Well, a guy yesterday on Twitter told you that in his experience playing Madden, you have to run the ball to keep the defense honest. So I don't know how you can argue with the logic that it's not successful in Madden to pass every play.
Yeah, no, Madden simulations for the win. I don't know. I actually talked with that guy a little bit longer. I did mess with him and I did quote tweet him, which was a little douchey, but that was an amazing.
I love a good quote tweet where someone looks ridiculous. Like I just love it.
But I kept interacting with him and I kept asking him questions, and we finally settled on where he agreed that the model that we had looked at was decent. He wasn't just dismissing it out of hand, and he seemed like at least a semi-thoughtful guy. But it is interesting that people. There's this idea, Cade Massey, the guy, Massey Thaler paper, Thaler won a Nobel Prize in economics.
Massey Peabody, that site?
Massey Peabody, that guy, yeah.
There's a plug. That's a very, if you enjoy wagering on the outcomes of NFL games, that's a very good website.
Yeah, he's a professor at Wharton, just a super guy. And he wrote a paper recently, 2 years ago, I think, on something called algorithm aversion. And basically what it means is that if you give people the ability to use an algorithm, a model, and they think it's infallible, robotic, always right, they'll use it. The minute they find out that it is fallible, that it is imperfect, they will no longer trust it. Even if you show them that the model performs better than human guessing. So you could show them that on average, the model is better than you, and they still will reject it. The solution he found is fascinating. You let people tweak the model. You let people dig into it, change a couple things, tweak the knobs.
Yeah.
They make it worse. They make it worse, but they trust it again. So it's this idea that because we need people to trust the models, you allow them to make it worse, but only by about 5%. And then people will start making better decisions because they'll rely on this objective model rather than their own.
You really see that in daily fantasy right now, like with like Fantasy Labs and Daily Roto and some of these other sites. They have their very good mathematical, you know, back tested models. And then they let you mess with a few inputs here or there, or they let you boost up how much you like a player or decrease how much you like a specific player. Like I totally see, and I'm sure not based on this paper at all, but that's just something that plays out in human psychology.
Yeah, and I don't think those businesses would be successful if they didn't allow it. And that's what's fascinating. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like you have to meet people where they live. And if we get better and maybe we take a little bit of, you know, EB off because we need to allow people to tweak, fine, at least we're better, right?
Yeah.
But anyway, fascinating stuff. And I think it kind of explains why people, when they hear things about football that are different than all the truisms we've been told about the game, immediately stiff arm it and go, no, it can't be true.
Hey everyone, I wanted to take a minute to tell you about Apex Fantasy Leagues, the best place to play online season-long fantasy football for money. There is a skill-based format where you play 2 games per week, and there's industry-leading payouts where Apex actually adds money to the payout pool. They really ensure that the best fantasy players get the good return on their investment. Apex hosts 12-team PPR leagues that provide a variety of drafting options, live or email, snake draft or auction. You also have the flexibility to sign up for a league just hours before the draft. On top of that, Apex pretty often puts extra money from their profits into the prize pool to make sure that leagues get filled. Apex also offers dynasty leagues in a variety of formats. And finally, Apex is the place to play if you want to win big money in a format that mitigates randomness. Not only does Apex have the highest payouts in the whole industry on a percentage basis, but it also features both blind bidding, free agent acquisition budgets, so that all free agent acquisitions are fair in 2 matchups per week, one versus a head-to-head opponent and the other versus the league average, so that, you know, you don't get screwed when your opponent has the most points and you have the second most points. You're still going to come out of that week with a win. You can compete every week without worrying about arbitrary strength of schedule. Give it a try. I promise you will love it. Go to apexfantasyleagues.com today and sign up. And now let's get back to the show. So the biggest truism in football right now, I would say that's universally agreed by like the good old boys club, like John Gruden and, you know, average NFL DFS player on Twitter would agree that the biggest truism is that you have to have an elite quarterback to win or to be really good. And Kevin and I talked about this old fantasy douche article on RotoViz, the YOLO QB strategy, which as he talked about, it reminded me like, I love limited and bad running quarterbacks like Terrell Pryor, Tim Tebow, like all these guys. Whenever they were around, I stand for them so hard because I just there's something about football of like the gadget quarterback that just really does it for me. And the idea of having 3 of those guys on the roster and deploying them situationally is amazing to me. And so what I wanted to ask you from a more analytical perspective is you have the 2-3 guys who can run, who can throw deep, the kind of more statue guy. In terms of like expected value, what does this do to your roster? Are you losing a ton of value because you're not really getting the next Andrew Luck on your roster unless you happen to get super lucky with, you know, Tom Brady or whatever. But you're not spending a lot of draft capital on quarterbacks if you're implementing this strategy.
Yeah, I think that's a benefit. And I really think the devil's in the details, because I think the reason why having that guy on the field all the time is that is important in terms of strategy is because of deception. You know, you can do all these different things and you're not telegraphing your moves to the defense and the defensive coordinator. Pardon my dog. And so I think what you would have to do is you would have to trot out your guys like almost like relief pitchers in baseball. You would have to trot them out in specific situations where you still had deception. I think one of the examples I thought of, like, say Josh Allen, you know, he's an arm punter. He can throw the ball down the field pretty good. You would want to be able to have a constraint play when he's on the field, the opposite of what's expected. So you expect him to go deep. Maybe you have a bunch of draw plays written up as well that kind of go off of that. And then you put him out there in situations where both are viable, like maybe second and medium or short, where you can either run or pass deep. It's things that teams do all the time. You take the EV plus shot down the field. But if they give you that look that they're defending that, then you go ahead and run it. And I think if you did, if you used each of them in that way smartly, I think you could get the best of all worlds. I mean, I don't think you're giving up too terribly much. Obviously you want the elite quarterback, so you don't have to do all that shuffling and you don't have to spread out the snaps, and you can just focus on one individual and help them learn the offense. But yeah, if you don't have an elite quarterback and you don't have the draft capital to get one, it seems to me like, why wouldn't you try that?
There's definitely some like personality aspects and stuff, like the same thing that we talked about with if you take Baker and Rosen at 1 and 4 and all of that, that I think muddles it a little bit. But I just, more than anything else, this is, if you gave me one thing to have an NFL team try, this would probably be it. It would either be this or just what would happen if you passed on 100% of downs. Those would be like the two things I would just want to see happen more than anything.
Man, I would settle for 80%. I would just, then I think
no,
we would be
100% is like the you know, the acid test. Like that's just like the, because we have no control for that at all. We have no idea how defenses would even react. Like what kind of personnel packages would teams even really have defensive linemen, or would they just have edge rushers? Like it would just be so fascinating to me to see what would happen.
It would be interesting. But I think what you would get, you wouldn't prove much to the doubters. You would just say, this is a ridiculous operation here.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, it probably won't work. You do need a constraint on passing. You know, you need to have an answer for when they do gear up for the pass. So I would just, but I think if we did have a couple teams doing 80% passing, I think we would find where the optimal mix is. And that's what we want, right? That we really want to know where that is in football. If we knew that, then we could start making a lot of really good decisions about the game.
Kind of seems like teams are getting close. Like 65-35 is, like, that's far. That's farther than I ever thought the game would go.
65 run. I mean, we got it reversed, you know?
Yeah.
We're far, far away, in my opinion. And then you got Gruden. And you got...
Yeah, Gruden, man. Gruden is just, he is cruising for just getting hurt all year. That team's going to be horrible. And Derek Carr is like way worse than he thinks Derek Carr is too, which is like, the two futures bets that I've made that I like, the line is horrible on the one. The Colts over 6.5 is like horrible now. It's like -170 or something. And then the Raiders under at whatever number it is now. That's just like easy game because their division is tough and they suck.
Yeah, they're looking at 70s film, and he's using some of the plays. That's insane. That's crazy. You know, someone said maybe they're trolling, and
I don't think Gruden's high level enough to troll like this.
Maybe though, he's been in the media. Like I don't know. Like because it was funny because who was it? Carr was doing an interview yesterday, and I watched it with his brother, and he said, they said, well, what are you guys going to do this year? And he's all triple option. You know, we're doing the triple wing. And he's like, and then he looks at the camera and he's like, yeah, like I'm going to give away you people watching what we're going to do this year. And then you saw that the tight end, I think it was Cook, talking about 70s grainy film. And maybe we're being trolled. And if we are, like,
it would be amazing.
respect. Like, yes, thank you, Gruden. Like, he would then immediately just be my favorite coach of all time.
Yeah, I mean, if he comes out game one and Carr throws 45 times and Amari Cooper has 19 targets and, like, Marshawn barely touches the field, yeah, I'm in. Like, that would be amazing.
It would be. It would be. So I'm
I also should say I do love the triple option. Like, I love Georgia Tech football. Like, I don't know. I think it's because I played a lot of NCAA games growing up, and the triple option was, like, undefeated. Like, you could just run on, if you played online, you could just run that continually, and it was easy game. So that's probably where that comes from.
If you're good at it on NCAA, yeah, you're unstoppable.
Do you play Madden?
What's that?
Do you play Madden?
I did for a while, and the problem is the time investment, man. If you want to compete with those guys who really, they're usually kids, but they
yeah, you had to be. It's like a second job.
Yeah, I mean, they like nano blitzes at the time when I was doing it. I think EA might have addressed it, but basically you move your guys around just before pre-snap, just to the perfect way. And then because you've been in the lab, because you've done so many simulation runs on it, like against the AI, you know exactly where to put them that it'll break the AI, the blocking AI, and you can get these blitz home almost every time. And like finding those glitches was just a big part of being a top level player. And it was just, It became about a different game than simulating football. Do you know what I mean?
That's just the way sports video games have always been. Like, I play a lot of FIFA, and like it is similar to what you see on the field, but you can only play one way. There's only one tactic that uses all the game mechanics and everything the right way. And I'm going to be playing Madden this year. I'm actually having one of the guys on the Ultimate team on the podcast sometime next week. We're going to chat and actually we're giving away two copies of Madden too. So everyone be excited for that. But I'm assuming that what will happen in it is, you know, there's an exact right ratio of pass to run. That's like, it's like unavoidable in creating a sports video game. Sports video games philosophically are so interesting to me because you can't really do a recreation and it becomes a video game, just like Call of Duty is a video game where it's all about finding the most effective tactic available and not really about the simulation of the real thing, which is fascinating to me.
Exactly. And the min-maxers will always find your mechanics, the underlying math that controls your game and how to optimize for it. And so it's, I totally agree with what you're saying.
So you've had now some time to dig through the data that Twitter so kindly purchased for you. Do you have any big revelations or anything surprising to report? Last time we had you on, I think you had just gotten it. It had been like 2 or 3 days. So something you didn't anticipate, anything surprising, any big reveals, something along those lines?
Sure. I mean, the really interesting things I wanted to look at, first of all, were I did a deep dive into running. I really wanted to understand the running game, and I had all this rich data to go with it. I know when a guard was pulled. I know when there's a lead blocker. I know what hash the play started from. I know the type of blocking scheme, whether it's zone or something. I put them into two big bins because there's too many. So I had the power in the zone. And that's really the way coaches think about running as well. So, and I looked at which one was more successful. And so I think the interesting stuff about running the ball that I found was that the NFL actually runs more zone than they do power. But in the situations where you should run, which is second and short, third and short, goal line, red zone situations, power is it's not a slam dunk, but it's more successful. It's probably more successful. So you should in those situations be designing more creative power plays. And then on the defensive side of the ball, I wanted to know the effect of men in the box versus something some people call advantage, which is the difference between how many blockers there are versus defenders. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that blocking advantage just didn't matter. And which is interesting when you take into account that power runs, which is about providing it.
A football guy would hate you saying that so much. They would be, tilting their balls off.
Oh, totally. Totally. But what it ends up being is that you're not breaking off long runs when you have advantage and the team knows you're running. I mean, that's very rare. Where you're breaking off long runs is where the team has a light box and you're able to bust.
Yeah, it's when you get, it's when you're through the second level as you get through the block. That's like, right. I would actually feel like a lot of running backs would probably tell you the same thing. Like, it's all about getting to the second level.
Yeah, coaches will even agree with it. So that tweet actually got picked up by a bunch of coaching websites, and they actually were like, look at this, this is cool. And there was a lot of discussion around it. And, you know, my whole thing was, well, isn't that surprising when you have overwhelming force at the point of attack that you can be more successful on short yardage? That makes sense. You know, but like in terms of EPA or yards per carry, things that are sensitive to the long run, then absolutely it's way more important to run against light boxes. And so my conclusion from looking at that data is just that if you're coming to the line and you have a run play call, you're doing it wrong. Like, you should be responding to what the defense is giving you.
Yeah, it should be RPO every play.
RPO or just pass. Like, you know, I mean, and you go there.
Right.
You,
so like the Mike Leach system where every play call is a pass and then you give the quarterback the responsibility to audible to a run if he sees fit.
That's it. I think that's the right way to go. And unless you're in a situation, which lots of analytics guys have found, where you should be running, where it's more advantageous to run, where it's more successful in the long run to run. Along the goal line with Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl, they should have run. And the analytics says that. It's not like after the fact, you know,
I mean,
Monday morning.
Clearly Pete Carroll was throwing the game. Clearly he had like a $12 billion bank wire coming in. That's like the most inexplicable thing in NFL history.
It was crazy. It was crazy, and they knew it was coming. I mean, obviously, you saw the results.
I had the Patriots money line in that game, and I'm just like I didn't believe it as it was happening. I still hardly believe that it happened. I also had the Patriots and the points in the 28-3 comeback game, which
God.
I mean, that may be the sickest cover in the history of gambling. Like, if you think about all the money that was wagered on it, like that's probably like a. I mean, how much money do you think is wagered legally and illegally on the Super Bowl? $5 billion?
Gosh, I think I saw a number once, but it's I've lost that number, I would be guessing. But yeah. $5 billion sounds low? I don't know.
I mean, yeah, that sounds like honestly sounds low. And a team was down 28-3 and came back, and because of the way that the overtime rules worked, they covered. Like, it's amazing.
It's the greatest celebration on a sports bet ever. I mean, gosh. Yeah, that must have been awesome for you.
And I'm still not even after everything I lost on the Cam Newton Peyton Manning Super Bowl. That's the biggest dump of money I've ever had in one day in my life.
Did you spread it across a bunch of props, or was it just
dumped? I mean, I was all in on the Panthers. I had like the line kept moving a little bit, and every time it would move, I'd just lay more.
Oh wow.
That was when I was in college. And I wasn't rich or anything, and I probably lost $2,500 because I had never been more confident, and Cam just had the worst game of his life. It was horrible. It was so mad.
Manny didn't look too good in that first quarter either. I remember some of those wobbly passes he was throwing to the sideline.
I was ready. I was ready for Brock to come in.
It was incredible. I'm a Bronco fan.
I didn't even know that.
Converted. Yeah, I was a converted Bronco fan from the Niners, but I remember watching it with a guy who's been a lifelong Bronco fan, and I saw some of those throws. I turned to him, I said, "Oof, you know, Manny better gear up. He's got to put some more behind those throws than that."
I mean, that was the defense wins championships year. I guess. I don't know. I can't even talk about it. It makes me sick. So while we're here talking about betting, I've actually never directly asked you about this, but obviously you've done a ton of work in predictive analytics and what helps teams win and what to look for in winning teams. How do you apply this stuff to betting lines, to futures, to looking at a line and being like, well, that line's just not right. It's like, what, and I'm not, don't give away the secret sauce or anything, but just kind of give people a couple things to look at.
Yeah, no, I think with this new data, I would look for teams that are doing the right thing in the right situations against the right men in the box. And when I find a team that will run against 8 men in the box, no matter what, like that's what they're talking about in Seattle. Now we need to be able to run against, you know,
oh man, I'm fading all Seattle players in season long fantasy this year. I don't have Baldwin. I don't have Russ. I don't have any of them.
So when I find a matchup that maybe the line doesn't reflect that one team is going to run into the brick wall and then the other team has been doing the right thing for the majority of the time, and the line doesn't reflect the fact that, that one should be a huge favorite, that would be, those would be the ones I would pound. And so I'd look at first and second down, how often they pass on those downs. That's a good proxy for all this. And, you know, I would look at, you know, are they running the ball on third and short, and second and short like they should. And yeah, so just basic stuff like that, I think is, and folks like Warren Sharp, they do a good job of capturing a lot of that with their early down success rate metrics and stuff like that. So I don't think there's going to be a huge edge from all this new data I've had to look at least not yet. One of the other interesting things I found, by the way, was that, you know, people want to talk a lot about the type of safety look that a guy has pre-snap. So whether middle field open, middle field closed, in other words, if it's cover three, there's one guy in the middle of the field. And if it's cover two, there's two safeties splitting half of the field. Or if it's quarters, you know, the cornerbacks are taking a quarter of the field. But in any event, that look is important to football. It's important to quarterbacks, how they make their pre-snap read and what they decide to do and where they decide to go with the ball. And it turns out that it doesn't matter. Like, it, teams are equally successful against both looks. And cover three is the most popular coverage in the NFL. But it isn't the most effective.
Shocking. Shocking, yeah. That the thing that happens most often is not the most effective.
Yeah. So it's just that was an interesting thing, too. So, like, sometimes you look at the data, you expect to find something, and you don't. And and that was one of those cases, and I thought it was pretty surprising.
Something it doesn't happen every season, doesn't happen every week, but when you get a public favorite, like a quarterback who people think is good, but you have questions about, when they go on the road, like Andrew Luck is very good against the spread in his career, but against elite teams against the spread in his career, he's not been very good. So, like, that's a spot that I like to do, like the Patriots against these young quarterbacks, or the Steelers, you know, against these, like the first Baker game at Heinz Field, whatever week that is, I will probably like the Steelers side quite a bit, because Baker, the Browns, how weird is this? The Browns are likely to be a public team this year in terms of the betting lines.
You think?
Yeah, people, maybe it's just, maybe I have a skewed perspective from being on football Twitter, but how else would you explain their win total being like six after 1-31?
And another point in your favor, the favor of your argument, is the ADPs of the various Browns skill position players. It doesn't.
Yeah, the Browns running backs ADPs. Imagine selecting any of them. Could not be me.
Yeah, no. I think I have a little bit of high just because I love him as a player. That's just bias and blind spot on my part. He's not going to be getting any of that third down work, and he's not going to be a part of that passing game. So
the Browns, public team. There you go.
Yeah, I mean, it could be. I think they'll be better, though. Like, they should have won three games last year.
Well, certainly they should be better. It's just a matter of how much, like, you want to talk about a team that does not optimize their play calling. Right? Like, they have maybe the worst head coach in football.
Right. So Hugh is the big drag on that team. And it's the reason why I'm kind of fading them, is just because even if they have gotten maybe two games, three games better than last year, and they should have won 2-3 games last year, I think he could still make them a four-win team.
You know, like, yeah, that's the thing, is they could be better. They could have early down success, like all this stuff that, like, people point to as winning metrics, and it still might not matter because their decision-making is so suboptimal.
Yeah.
So you got to live in my world for a month. You got to live in the world where soccer was the thing that everyone was talking about on Twitter for a month. How was that experience for you? How confusing was it? Did you feel like the middle of the day and just have people tweeting in all caps?
Man, I like looking at the goals. Some of those goals were gorgeous. Some of those goals were just stunning aesthetically. And I appreciate
1 to 10,
that. But
this World Cup was like an 8. It was like really good.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, but again, there's like the parts of the game that bother me, bug me. Like, they bug me in a way that it's hard to get past. And I think we had a conversation about the play clock. Like, it's just little things like that where you're just like, why are you that way, soccer?
Well, it's very American to be like, well, the game ends now. Where it's like, if you think about the imperial sports, cricket, soccer, rugby, golf. These things don't have a time limit. Like they just exist until the score, you know, whatever. So like that's why I don't think that you know, when soccer was invented, people were super worried about, you know, precision stopwatch time endings.
But I just think, like, knowing what the win condition is, you have the most points at the end of the game, and then you don't know when the end of the game is. That's a problem. And it's like, I guess I get it now when I think about it in terms of, it's just an event. It's an event. It's not really sport. It's like event. Like, and I kind of like, the referee's the dungeon master, and they're just like, we're just going to do this thing, and it's just going to happen for a while, and at the end, there's going to be a winner. You know, and that's how it's going to be. And like, you know, do your athletic thing over here and try and be your, you know, your best version of yourself. But at the end, when I've decided it's over, there'll be a winner.
Did you get a chance to have an opinion on the VAR, the review system?
No, I saw it occurring, and it just seemed so natural to me, and watching so much football, like, that it didn't even occur to me that it's new until someone pointed it out.
Yeah, so like, that was like a big upset. Is that was kind of, people thought it was going to be a disaster because it did not really work in the league seasons. It got introduced in two leagues and it was kind of a mess. But I also thought it was like way more efficient than however long the replay system takes in the NFL. Like, I thought, like, some of them were taking like 45 seconds. And I was like, why, this should be able to happen in football too.
Yeah, no, it didn't bother me at all. I thought it was well done. It seemed to me like it was part of the game. And it, like I said, when someone pointed out to me, I was really surprised. Where they really could learn something from the NFL is in concussion protocols, though.
Oh, dude. It's soccer, it's like it doesn't even exist. Like concussion protocol doesn't
in the face. He got picked up off the ground and slapped in the face. Like, get back out there, son.
Soccer in terms of concussions is in the total dark ages. But if you want to talk about like fitness levels and athletic testing, you go to one of the big clubs in soccer, they would take an absolute dump on whatever NFL teams do. It's a very anachronistic world where, like, if you get a concussion, you're just expected to keep playing. But like every calorie and all oxygen molecule in your body is being measured by like six doctors at all times. And you know why it is it's because if there was a concussion rule implemented where like a guy could go off the field and get tested for 5 minutes for a concussion and someone could like sub in for him or something, it'd be gamesmanship, and you just could never implement it. Like, guys would fake it.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I mean, gosh, with all the flopping that goes on and then the clock, boy, that would drive me up the wall. Like, what would happen to the clock? Now we'd have like,
I actually do not hate the idea of, like, you know, the timekeeper literally having a stopwatch on the side and stopping it every time, stopping the clock every time, or alternatively stop, like, just keeping track of how long the ball is not in play and then adding that exact amount of time.
I'm all in on that. Yep. Cause I don't care if it counts down or up so long as I know when it ends. Right. I mean, either way, it solves the problem. The problem is that you don't know. How do you strategize around a game where you don't know where the end is? Someone said to me on Twitter, they're like, well, you know, it's your Western, you know, centric view of things. Like, people can't afford watches that count down in the third world. And I blew my mind. I'm just like,
well, that's just, soccer wasn't invented in the third world, so it doesn't even matter. It's just, this is the way it's been done for 120 years or whatever. I would assume that the reason the rules are this way is because literally a lot of these games probably didn't have stopwatches when they first started, and it's just this thing of, this is the way it's always been done.
Right. That's the answer. It's because that's the way it's always been done.
I would kind of hate it if there was like a buzzer that went off, though. I think I would be like, this is stupid.
But I mean, if what drives soccer to finally get their clock right is concussion protocols that make sense, I would love that. Because then you get two good things all at once.
I think we solved soccer. I think we fixed it. The MLS, by the way, back in its infancy, had like some of these rules. Had like you could make like six subs and like guys could come in and out and there was no extra time. There was only penalty kicks. Like, there was some of that stuff and people hated it. It was
Why did they hate it? What's the hate about?
Just, is
it
not,
Because it's not how it was?
Because it's not how it was, yeah.
This is different, yeah.
I actually think, like, the element of strategy, if you can make six subs, would be, like, amazing. It'd be a lot different.
I dig that.
The rich teams would...
Oh, boy.
Like, it would be... The rich team, like, no poor team could ever win again, though. Because you would have teams with, like, $150 million of players on their bench.
And there's no cap in soccer, am I right? I know nothing. I'm so...
No cap. Like, so... The Dallas Cowboys are worth, they're the team that's the biggest in the NFL, right? And they're probably worth $4 billion. I would guess that would be their sale value.
Yeah, that, like, sounds right.
The fifth biggest team in world soccer is probably worth $30
billion. Wow.
Like Juventus just bought Ronaldo for $100 million, and that's like a drop in the bucket. Like, it just doesn't even matter to them. They'll make that money back on jerseys in a week. Like, the amount of money involved in world soccer is, like, you cannot comprehend it. Like, guys in the MLS make more money than Antonio Brown. And the MLS is, like, the 40th best league in the world. Like, it's a totally different realm because the audience size is so different. Like, the viewership is just, you can't even compare it. You're marketing to one country versus every country in the world.
And they all love it with a passion, the kind of passion that we love our football with.
Yeah, like, there are Manchester United fans in Argentina who, like, wake up every morning and watch the game and buy the jerseys, and they'll never, ever go to Manchester in their life. And there's not even an opportunity for them to do it. But, you know, they cheered for an Argentine player who played for them when they grew up, and they're just loyal to it forever.
Gotcha.
And that's not, it's much more common to support, like, three or four teams, too.
Interesting. I'd like to get into soccer. I just need to get past these issues I have with it. It's probably
we'd welcome you with open arms, pal. All right, pimp your stuff. Give us all the places to find you and your work.
Sure. Yeah, I'm at 4for4 with my fantasy stuff. Just wrote an article on wide receiver draft strategy, and that came out over the weekend. Check that out. Pretty good. You can see the guys I'm down on, the guys I'm up on. AirYards.com, obviously, still some good stuff there. Really take advantage of the Game Speed app that I have up on there. This is the last year I'll have the data. And I think it's already led to a couple of things that have proved to be true, like Jordy Nelson still being fast. Like, him losing a step is probably, I mean, maybe half a step, whatever, but he's still fast. Like, he can still run fast in a straight line. Gruden went on the air just yesterday and said he can still run 22 miles an hour with a speedometer, whatever he said they had attached to him. Good old Gruden. But there's also stuff for quarterbacks and wide receivers on areas.com. It's all free. Check it out. Awesome stuff.
Great. We'll have you back soon, hopefully.
Right on,
when soccer has ruled the world and Bitcoin's 100K.
Oh, boy.